We just sang a song about faith. You know, it's an important thing to understand that in America today, 40% of all Americans, when they're asked what their religious convictions are, respond, none. That's according to the Gallup poll. There's lots of causes for that. One of the causes is churches. I don't know whether you saw the thing that Jim Baker is selling to old people, a cure for the coronavirus. And the stuff he's selling is the same stuff he sold 6 years ago for another problem of health issues that was going around. What does that do? Well, for a lot of people, it causes people to lose faith. Nearly every congregation of every denomination out there and of every congregation of the Church of Christ has had people who have lost their faith because of something the church did. And what's interesting about this is it's never something that the church did that's biblical. It's always some crazy human thing that caused the difficulty. If you're interested, there's an interesting article in the Gospel Herald. You can pick it up online, which is titled, Do Churches Produce Atheists? And you can read more about that if you're interested. But I think there are some important reasons why people have doubts. Why they call themselves none. One of those difficulties is that they have not been taught that there is a God. We have a tendency to assume that everybody believes. And there are people who come to church every Sunday morning and don't really believe. It's also important to understand that there are a lot of questions out there that people aren't getting answered. One of the things about our Bible classes that I really like is the fact that we're sort of open-ended in our classes. And Carl has given us the term rabbit trail. That's a Carlism. But what that means is that we have a tendency, when there's an issue we're concerned about, to leave our current study for a minute and try to answer the question that's being raised. Because 5 or 10 or 15 people addressing the question and gives a whole lot better answers than one person. And that's one of the advantages of the Bible study. That was the way it happened in the first century church. But for a lot of people, good questions have not been answered. One of the stated reasons for people losing faith is that they have seen a lack of commitment in adults. And it isn't just hypocrisy. But for a lot of people, their priorities have not included God. And so when we look at this question of what are we going to do about the coronavirus, are we going to use an excuse to not go to church, to not fellowship, to not study, to not learn? What's our priorities? Where do we begin in our discussions? When it comes to decisions that we make about life, where is God in the list of priorities? Do we start there or do we end there? Or is God something we only do when we are so desperate we don't know anything else to do? Is He a last resort? One of the things that you hear people say is, well, there's no atheist in foxholes. Well, I can tell you from personal experience, that's not true. I was an atheist and I was in a foxhole with bullets flying all over the place. And one of the things I used to brag about was I never scared me into believing in God. Well, I was in the bottom of the foxhole and the bullets were up there. But it's important to understand that priorities say a lot to kids. One of the things I hope all of us, parents, grandparents, can do is to allow our children and our grandchildren to see that the way we make decisions is based upon, number one, how it affects our relationship to God. That needs to be our starting point, not our end point. And we destroy the faith of kids when God is virtually non-existent in the things that we do and the things that we say in our decisions. It's also important to understand that decisions about life, for a lot of people, their faith has no connection at all. How many people get married today? Have you ever thought about why over 50% of the people that are living together in husband-wife relationships are not married? What's going on here? How does our morality affect our sexual relationships? It's interesting to me that the Prime Minister of Britain right now is a guy who has, on his third wife, well, he's actually not on his third wife, he's on his third live-in, and the girl he's living with right now is pregnant and having a baby in July. This is the Prime Minister of England. What message does that convey to young people? What is the basis of seeing how faith affects what we do in our sexual behavior? What effect does faith have upon our plans for marriage? You know, sometimes marriages that don't look like they would ever work, and I can give you again my personal example of that, work only because there is a common basis based upon God's standards of morality. And when that's violated, then the marriages fall apart. To what extent do we let young people know about the importance of faith in how they make moral decisions about their lives, about their dress, about who they associate with, about what kind of recreation they go to? And for that matter, how much does that affect us? Why are there nuns? There's a lot of answers. I want to ask you a question, a couple of questions. These aren't questions I want you to answer to me. I think you need to answer it to yourself. You have to answer it to God. What kind of faith do you have? Important question, folks. What kind of faith do you have? Do you have an inherited faith? Are you a member of the Church of Christ because mom and dad were members of the Church of Christ, or because grandma and grandpa were members of the Church of Christ? When I talk to young people, a lot of times we get into this discussion about faith, and I'll say, well, you're very active in the church. And I can tell you how many times I've had a kid say to me, well, yeah, it's a small price to pay for peace at home. And when they get to college, and there's no longer mom and dad dragging them forcibly to church every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday night, or however many times they go, what happens? When I was working at Indiana University in the Bureau of Measurements, one of the things that we did was compile data for the university. When kids fill out their registration card, they put church preference on the card. I remember the last year that I was there, there were around 300 kids, plus or minus, that expressed that they were members of the Church of Christ. How many of them attended church on Sunday morning? I knew all the congregations around the university, North Central Church, Fourth and Lincoln Church, Indiana Avenue Church. How many of those kids were in any of those churches? Answer? 11. See, what happens is an inherited faith is a faith that doesn't sustain us in the real things of life. And I'm going to have some suggestions to you. If you sit back and you say to yourself, yeah, that's probably a major factor for me, is that I was brought up in the church. I really was never given any other choice. That can be changed. There's another kind of faith that's out there. And that's a faith that is blind faith. You know, one of the things we get into with preachers is that sometimes churches want a preacher that can move people emotionally. When I first started preaching, one of the things that I was told was, well, you need to develop a path that will cause people to respond to the gospel of Christ. So, I would frequently interrupt the invitation song and make an emotional plea to people to come forward. And a lot of times people did. The more I worked at it, the better I got at it. And I watched and I learned from preachers, both denominational and Church of Christ preachers, who were great motivators. Some of you may remember a guy named W.A. Bradfield. He preached in this area, probably every other congregation around here. One night when he was at a gospel meeting at the Caroline Church of Christ, which at that time was on Calvert Street in South Bend, he interrupted the invitation 9 times. He had 24 people come forward. In the Gospel Advocate, back in the old days, they had what we used to call a brag sheet, where at the back of the Gospel Advocate, the preachers would tell how many people they baptized in the previous month. These were people, for the most part, that were stampeded into an emotional response. Now, I'm not saying our message needs to be sterile. I try not to speak in a monotone. I try to give examples that I hope will keep people interested. But your response to God cannot be just purely emotional. Because what happens when it's an emotional response and things start happening in life that are not easy, your faith doesn't stand. And this is biblical. Look at, for example, Psalms 10. David talking here. Can you relate to this? Why, O Lord, do you stand afar off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? God, look at what's happening to me right now. Where are you? Haven't you ever been there? Psalms 13. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? This is David talking. How long must you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts? And every day I have sorrow in my heart. How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look at me and answer, O Lord my God. Can you relate to that? Have there been times in your life when you wonder, where in the world is God? Have you ever had time when you were praying and you finally just gave up? Because there was no answer coming. See, if our response is emotional, that's enough to destroy your faith. And let me tell you something, folks. We have a ton of people who are not here this Sunday morning or any other Sunday morning because they were emotionally stampeded into something. And when the going got rough, they just quit. They just see, what I'm saying to you is that God does not want us to have an inherited faith. God doesn't want us to just be stampeded emotionally. Some of us, like myself, have been trained professionally not to get emotional. Most doctors have had special classes they've taken to try and get them so they don't get emotional in the process of treating a situation. And if you've ever been in an emergency room, you can understand why that would be. But I suggest to you that God wants us to have an evidential faith. And that's something that you and I can do. I mean, if you had an inherited faith, is it growing? Is it getting better? Are you stronger today than you were a year ago? You can do something about that. If you've been emotionally stampeded into something that you really didn't understand what you were doing, somebody just got to you. You can change that. In Romans, the first chapter, starting with verse 20, look at this wording. This is Romans talking about the importance of the gospel of Christ. God's invisible qualities, His eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. He goes on and he says, we can know there is a God. How? Emotionally? Because mom and dad said this is what it is? Through the things He has made. Psalms 19, verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of His hand. One of the things I regret about not being able to do as much as I used to do is not being able to work camps as much as I used to, especially in the western part of the United States, especially at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Because what we used to do is at night, after the campfire died down, we get the kids out in the middle of a field and we look at the sky. I'd take them through the constellations and where they were and what they tell us and what they speak of. And I still have kids that write me about those times. One of the great things that we have is the capacity to go outside. Most of us don't live where light pollution is a major issue. There's a few exceptions. I don't think Richard probably could. Go out on Pitcher Lake sometime and just sit and look. You know, Jim and I like to fish. But one of the things that happens when we get out in a boat in the middle of nowhere fishing for bass, I forget to throw the lure out. Enhanced, encouraged, strengthened by the beauty of the creation. Seeing the owl fly over. Watching the beaver swim by. Through the things He has made. And then just look at our own bodies. 139 Psalm, verse 14. I will praise You, Lord, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are Thy works. And that my soul knoweth right well. Let me ask you something. Can you think of a car you can see that has run 82 years without a valve job or a new transmission? Without body work? Hey, ugly as it is, you're looking at it right now. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And if we take care of our bodies, we can live 70 or far more. Sometimes we have a thing with kids we do. We have a puppet show. We've done it here. Julie's done it a few times. I'm going to York College, Lord willing, in May and talking to them about this. We have hand puppets and skits that we do with little kids. You know who the heroes are in that show? Mr. Hart. A puppet shaped like a heart that talks about God's perfect pump. Ms. Lungs. And then my all-time favorite, you know, Mr. Intestines. It talks about the chemical processes that are built into our bodies. I mean, look what we eat and how it supplies our needs, especially if we eat the right things. See, these are evidential faiths. And God calls us to answer challenges to faiths. This is the church we're talking about. 1 Peter 3:15. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. What do you do when somebody asks questions? What do you do when somebody challenges your faith? And see, some of those challenges come from that little guy, from the grandkids. I'm going to be going down to Texas very shortly. There's the challenger right there. And one of the reasons I'm going down is that we've got three grandkids who just lost their father and are asking a lot of questions. I don't have all the answers, but I have studied this issue. I've been through this issue. Be ready to give an answer of the hope that is within you. We aren't called to know every answer there is out there, but we are called to know where to get that answer. And that's why we have classes. That's why we have sermons. And all of us can do that. Now, there are some of us who are specifically trained to be able to answer the major challenges of our day. I love Acts 17. Starting with verse 16. I don't have enough time to read that whole thing. If you haven't read it recently, read it again. Paul is on Mars Hill. What's that? That's the Harvard University of his time. He's talking to the Epicureans and the Stoics, the intellectual highbrows. And he sets them on their backs by being able to not only know how to answer their questions, but to teach them the beauty and the wonder of the teachings of Jesus Christ. In Mark 9, beginning with verse 22, Jesus says, "But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." This is people looking for help. And Jesus says, "If you can, everything is possible for him who believes." And I love the Father's response. "I do believe." But then he says, "But help me overcome my unbelief." You believe, yes. You wouldn't be here today. But have you grown in your faith? Have you helped your unbelief? Have you dug into the evidence that God has given us? Let me tell you something, folks. Having doubts is not bad. Having doubts is not bad. I have a list of kids that I had in Bible class that have done wonderful things. There's some kids that were at the Donmar Church back when I had the youth group that are powerhouses, doing amazing work. And I could get down the list, you know, Ferris Austin, Ed Powers. But you know what I remember about those kids? They had a bazillion questions. They challenged me in class. You know why we have trouble getting people to teach teenage classes? I love teaching teenagers. That's what I did for 41 years in the public schools. That's what I've done my entire life as an adult Christian. I've worked with teenagers. When I go to the Yosemite encampment and I teach there, you know who they give me? The teenagers. Nobody else wants them. Why? Because they're asking questions. They're challenging you. And sometimes, you know, you get kids with bad attitudes. I mean, I've had kids in a class jump up at the very start and say, I don't care what you say, I'm not going to listen to you. Okay. That's good. That's one less person's going to give me a hard time. But within 5 minutes, he's challenging something. But Jesus, I thought you said you weren't going to listen to me. Well, I know, but I don't ever, you know. Yeah. We need to be ready to give an answer, because doubt is not bad, but unresolved doubt will eat you alive. And for too many years, when kids asked a question that the preacher didn't want to deal with, they would put him off or put him down. And that destroys a kid. Give an answer to everyone who asks you of the reason of the hope that is within you. That means your own kid. That means your own grandkid. And if you can't find the answer, then get a hold of someone who can give you the answer. God has never called us to blind faith. Remember Thomas? You know, what's interesting to me is that Thomas is held up as doubting Thomas, the example of bad faith. You need to study the life of Thomas. When you go back and you look at John 11, beginning with verse 16, when Jesus decides he's going to go back to where Lazarus is, and he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead, and that was suicidal. People where Lazarus lived were trying to kill Jesus. But Jesus says, we're going back there. And who responds? Not Peter. Not Luke. Not John Mark. Thomas jumps up and says to the rest of the disciples, come on, let's go die with him. Does that sound like doubting Thomas to you? See, one time Thomas was the pillar of faith. Let's go get killed with him. Read that. Read John 11. But y'all know what happens. You go on over to chapter 20 when Jesus has died and he's not there when Jesus is raised. He doesn't believe the rest of them. And he says, I don't care what you say. I'm not going to believe. So how did Jesus handle that? Did he say, well, that's not in our lesson today, young man? Is that his response? Did he say, go see the rabbi, he'll straighten you out, you dumb idiot? I've seen that done to kids, haven't you? How did he respond? Hey, Thomas, stick your finger in my hand. Put your hand in my side. Stop doubting, Thomas. Believe. You know what we understand about Thomas from secular history? Is that Thomas was a pillar of faith. Thomas became one of the great missionaries of the early church. And I want to emphasize that God has never called us to blind faith. Go back to Proverbs 8 and read especially the first 11 verses and then the last 22 through 31. What are you going to see? You're going to see wisdom saying to you and to me, I was present before God began the creation. God used me in the creation. Come on, ignorant man. Look at what is around me and around you and learn. And then what does he do? He takes us to outer space. He takes us to the field. He takes us to the sea. He takes us to geology. He takes us all over the creation. Read Proverbs 8. When people are insecure about what's going to happen to them, what does Jesus do? Matthew 6. Look at the birds. See the lilies. And when you lose your life, what happens? I've had one person tell me, you know, you need to hold yourself up. You're over 80, and over 80 people don't survive this virus. Okay, if I die, so what? Dying's not the ultimate tragedy. Look at Romans 1, beginning with verse 18. We talked about that a minute ago. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. They have exchanged the truth of God for a lie and have worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator. Look at what is going on out there. I'm kind of ticked off with our neighbors that took their boat out. My illustration isn't there today. But that's what people are worshiping. Our materialistic world has substituted. Notice, they exchanged the truth of God for a lie. What's the lie? That this boat will make you happy. Bill will tell you something about boats. He's got a boat. Ask him when the last time was he when he used it. See, God has not called us to blind faith, but to evidential faith. And I suggest to you that the plan of salvation shows wisdom and expects you to make a thinking response. This is why I struggle with people who are motivated by fast-talking, eloquent preachers to be baptized. They don't understand why. They haven't read Romans 6. They don't have any idea what a new life is about and how they are going to be changed. On the day of Pentecost, what did Peter do? Did he stampede 5,000 people into walking down the aisle by an emotional plea? Do you ever notice his words? Save yourselves from this corrupt generation. He has talked about the horrors that have taken place in their own history, which they know. And he doesn't say, you know, just let me stir you up emotionally. What he says is, think, act, do it. Save yourselves. In Acts 26, beginning with verse 28, Paul has been talking and preaching to a Roman official, to a Jewish official. And the response they make is, man, in such a short time you expect me to respond to this? I wish I knew what happened to that guy. I wish I knew if he ever got around the prestige of his office and became a Christian. I suspect he did, but we don't know. So Joshua says, and we repeat today, choose you this day whom you will serve. I hope that you'll take some time to think about your own personal faith, to concern yourself with why you believe what you believe and what effect it has on your life. One of the things that we are doing today is we're singing a song. It's number 291. Take a look at this. If you open your books to that song. I know not why God's wondrous grace to me he hath made known. I do not understand how God can love me. Or why unworthy Christ in love redeemed me for his own. Then he follows that. I don't understand how the Spirit moves, convincing men of sin. Am I convinced? revealing Jesus through the Word. Oh, there's something we can do. Creating faith in Him. Studying the wisdom of God's plan. I know not what of good or ill may be reserved for me. Am I going to get the virus? I don't know. Of weary ways or golden days before His face I see. Paul said it early. If I get to go and be with Jesus, that's gain. But I'll hang around if I can be more fruitful for Him. That's up to God. I know not when my Lord may come, at night or noonday fair, or if I'll walk the vale with Him or meet Him in the air. If you need our prayers with you to help you grow in your faith, we have some things you can do. The first thing we can do is to pray with you for a growth in your faith. And if you are not a Christian, then you have no redeeming faith at all. So if you're interested, if you need to respond to God's invitation, we urge you to do that as together we stand and sing to encourage you. Won't you please come?